I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Ann Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers at Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of my wonderful co-hosts with me today. First up, it's our other lore-focused writer on the website, and that would be Matt Rossi. Hi, Rossi.
Hello.
And then, obviously, next up we've got, he's not a lore columnist for the website, he writes primarily about Shaman, but boy, by golly, does he ever know his lore. It would be Joe Perez. Say hey, Joe.
Well, hi there, everybody. And I appreciate that I got a by golly in there.
By golly. I messed it up, though, because I can't talk today, apparently. So Blizzard, in all of their infinite wisdom, has been releasing these freebie comics that have been leading into the Legion expansion. And last episode, we talked about the Magni comic because it had just come out right before we did the show. Since then, two more have come out, and there is going to be a total of four, so we should see a fourth one this week. But right now, I guess, we're going to go ahead and we're going to talk about the two that came out, because they're actually kind of interesting. Obviously, standard rules apply here. We're talking about the comics, we're talking about the Legion expansion, we're talking about possible lore spoilers, so if you're avoiding that kind of thing, you might want to come back after, I don't know, the expansion has launched. That seems like an awfully long time to wait, but that's okay. We'll forgive you. So the first of these two comics was Nightborne, Twilight of Suramar, and that one was written by Matt Burns with illustrations by
Ludo Lullaby.
Thank you. Thank you, Rossi, because I cannot talk today, I guess. Anyway, same artist and writer team as the Magni comic. So I was personally pretty delighted because, you know, it's the same beautiful art and I wanted to see more of it. And Matt Burns definitely has a handle on the Night Elf situation. So the comic itself, what did you guys think?
I honestly was very interested by it simply from the fact of it explains a little bit of why we're going to be seeing a little bit of what we're seeing, because the Nightborne have been on the Broken Isles for thousands of years, untouched, unbothered. So, and then you have to wonder, like, why are we potentially going to be encountering them as enemies, you know, when there's a bigger threat happening to the world? And this, I'm really appreciative that this comic sort of addresses that in a very concise way.
What about you, Rossi? What'd you think?
I'm interested in seeing, like, what the rebel faction of Nightborne does now that they've basically got lost. And, you know, we run into one of them if you're if you did the alpha or beta, you know that you eventually run into some of them. And it's pretty nasty what happens to them. Because if you remember what happened to the Blood Elves when they got cut off from magic, it's a lot worse for the Nightborne, because the Nightborne are even more addicted to magic than the Blood Elves were.
And honestly, I mean, I guess if you want to look at it from that perspective, the Blood Elves, for a while there, when they were you know, right after the War of the Ancients until the point that they established the Sunwell, they didn't have a well of anything to deal mm-hmm. with. So they had, like, that break of, what, a couple hundred years or something like that?
I don't even know exactly how long it was. They got themselves kicked out while Malfurion was still, like, moving and grooving.
Yeah.
So it could be any time. But it was before the war with the Satyr.
Are you sure it was before or after?
Yeah,
I thought it was after.
No, they left before the War of the Satyr because they're not there anymore when it happens.
That's true.
Yeah, they left before the War of the Satyr. But the Nightborn actually have an artifact. They have two artifacts, really. The one I'm going to talk about is the Nightwell.
Yeah.
Which you see in the comic. And the Nightwell is...
There's the Sunwell, then there's the Nightwell.
Yeah, the Nightwell is... Essentially, it's like a little piece of the original Well of Eternity that they draw from. And
this isn't, to be clear, this isn't, you know, a pool that they poured a vial of Well of Eternity water into, like with the well up on Teldrassil or even the Sunwell. This is actual Well of Eternity. This is
the
old,
power.
The original, not diluted, 100%, not from concentrate, all natural.
Well, and that's actually, that's how we, like Joe mentioned, that we find out why we're fighting these guys, and you basically, the comic book reveals that even now the Legion is still interested in that.
Oh yeah, well, and you hit the when you talk about it being the original, it's also very interesting to note that like they've had 10,000 years essentially of uninterrupted connection with this thing, which is just crazy if you think about it in terms of like arcane sort of infusing, because that means that they're either a crazy stupid powerful or as well as crazy stupid addicted. But it also makes them, like you said, a huge beacon to the Legion, because again, this is the pure font, essentially the original font.
Yeah. And it shows up in this.
Yeah. I also kind of find it kind of interesting just to see how they've physically evolved in 10,000 years. It's sort of like what would have happened to Sir Amar and the High... Well, it is. It's exactly what would have happened to Sir Amar and the Highborn had the War of the Ancients never happened. That's what the Night Elves would look like, theoretically, correct? Because they'd all be exposed to this magic juice.
I think maybe they wouldn't be quite as far along as the Nightborn, because they wouldn't... The Nightborn have been, like, it's a smaller group of people, and they're all, basically, their entire civilization is built around the Nightwell. So I think they may be even more changed than the Night Elves would be otherwise, because they would have had a much bigger culture and they were around the edges of the much larger Well of Eternity. So it's hard to say.
Well, there's also the other fact that like part of the reason that the Nightborn evolved and how they did is because they at one point started to run out of like mundane food, and as a result started like seeking actual nourishment from the Nightwell itself, which yeah. I mean, at that point you're literally ingesting pure arcane like substance at that point. That's going to alter you a little bit quicker than just living next to it, I think.
Yeah, they're definitely not, they're like, they are to Night Elves what Night Elves are to trolls in a lot of ways.
It's almost like they've sort of become a little bit blue dragony almost.
Well, and that's interesting because there's some tie-ins to that too.
Yeah, and I don't want to put too many things.
No spoilers,
on.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we won't spoil anything. I wasn't aware that was a spoiler because I haven't gotten that far. Okay.
Yeah. Let's just say Azuna touches on that. Azuna also touches on the period of time when this all happened.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it does.
And why, you know, why these guys basically were able to save what they were of themselves and how they managed to get away with it. Underneath Ashara's, you know, basically Ashara was busy. So
what happened was, back during the War of the Ancients, you know, you had Ashara, you had the Highborn, and there was a select few of her Highborn. Actually, I wouldn't even call it a few, because the Shendralar, obviously, down in Dire Maul, they didn't necessarily approve of what Ashara was doing. So they sort of removed themselves and isolated themselves, but kind of in a completely different way. And then up near Sir Amar, obviously, there was Elisandra, who decided that she wasn't too gung-ho about this whole rebuilding the world by using the Burning Legion to bulldoze it first plan. Like, that wasn't something she was really keen about. So she and her, you know, select few followers, who also agreed with this whole standpoint of, you know, maybe that's just a little insane. They all kind of cloistered themselves away, and that's how they became the Nightborne. They weren't even there during that final battle, I don't think.
No, they were. They basically put what was left of Suramar behind a protective barrier, yeah, and then rebuilt it over the centuries.
Sort of like the Dalaran bubble back in the day.
What's interesting, too, is that the Nightborne were not under the blessing of immortality from the ancients.
No, they weren't. Ancients,
the Aspects. They just, however, they've been using the Nightwell to sustain themselves, which is why Elisandre was able to exist for 10,000 years, which is another reason why they're physically different. These are beings who are far removed from what they were. In a lot of ways...
Considering what we know about the Well of Eternity itself and what it is exactly, it doesn't really... It's not too far-fetched to think that, yeah, that well could totally sustain them indefinitely.
Yeah,
pure life, essentially.
Yeah, at the cost of changing them pretty significantly. And they are very changed.
Oh, yeah. Their model... I mean, if you want to compare their model to that of, like, the standard elf, and not just, like, aesthetics, like, the way they decorate themselves, take that all out, the physiology of them is so wildly different. It's almost insane to me. Like, you look at them, and it's hard to call them elves when you've been so used to, like, blood elves and night elves for so long. Like, that's how far removed they are.
So in Nightborne, what we see here is basically, it's the setup for what we're going to kind of be introduced to once you get to Suramar. Obviously, there's been a shift in power in Suramar, and Gul'dan showed up, basically. I mean, in the comic, Gul'dan shows up and gave them a choice, you know, let us use your well and we'll let you live. You know, join with the Legion, we'll let you live. Otherwise, we're going to murder you all. And the Grand Magistress, she had to make a decision, you know, do I side with these people? Or, you know, for the good of my people, do I do this? Or do I refuse? Because if I refuse, then we're dead. We're just dead. We're gone. Whatever's left of Suramar is just toast. And she has to make that choice. And not everybody agrees with the whole... Well, with even the fact that she's deliberating. You know, they think that she should just be saying no. Obviously, the whole foundation of their society, this peculiar little secluded society that they've made, has been built on this idea of resisting the Burning Legion. So now that they're confronted with it again 10,000 years later, you would think that the automatic answer would be no, but apparently not. So yeah, you guys want to talk about that?
Well, you get to see right up front that you know, Gul'dan basically makes two points to her. One is that, you know, we're going to kill you. Like, we have infinite numbers. We can just keep coming. It doesn't matter how strong your defenses are. We can just keep throwing demons at you indefinitely. You will eventually fall. Two, if you just give us what we want, you don't have to die. I'm not interested in killing you.
You can keep doing whatever crazy things you're doing.
I mean, you'll have to give up some of the power of the well, but in exchange for that, you'll still be here. And Sana, you know, she does consider it. I mean, it's not just, she doesn't just jump in on this chance. She's not like, yay, this is great. She takes time to think about it.
She takes he gives her 3 days, and she takes the full 3 days to think it over.
There's an important thing here, right? Like, let's also consider the fact that it's not just like a voice or a letter was delivered to her. It is a manifestation of Gul'dan past the barrier. So that is a very, very important note, because this is this all-powerful barrier that is supposed to have kept them safe and keep anything from getting through to them for 10,000 years, and here's Gul'dan standing in front of her. Whether that is actually him, a physical projection, it doesn't matter. Something was able to get through that barrier. That's going to cause serious doubts in your own safety at that point, because if he's powerful enough to get through, he might be powerful enough to make good on those threats.
So here's my question, right? Gul'dan, he obviously wants the power of the Nightwell for whatever it is he's doing. Now, at first, on first reading, I presumed, oh yeah, to perform whatever spell to go ahead and open up that big portal on the Broken Isles. And then I'm like, wait a tick. If he's already got all of these demonic forces that are pummeling this barrier, then that would imply that he's already opened this big old portal and there are demons pouring through it. So what does he need the Nightwell for, exactly?
Who's his master? He says who his master is when you confront him.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
And how much power does it take to bring him through?
His master requires a much bigger portal to get through.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it took the Well of Eternity to almost bring him through the first time, so.
And it took the Sunwell to bring Kil'jaeden through.
Yeah.
I mean,
just Kil'jaeden. That's not even
the big bad.
So it's very possible that they're seeking the power necessary to bring him through, because if you go back in the Chronicle, we know that he took what he was told by Golgoneth and the others. He took it to be not what they meant it to be. Like, they had told him, there's this, I don't know, are we in the spoiler territory here, or can I just say this?
Well, we've already given the spoiler warning, so if you feel like dropping spoilers, you know, go ahead.
In Chronicle, we reveal Sargeras, when he fights the other Titans, they reveal to him the existence of this true power Titan, what you might call the final Titan, who will be so powerful that it will be able to defeat the lead, you know, it could be able to defeat the old gods and the Void Lords, which Sargeras takes as a challenge. Like, this thing's going to be a threat to me. I have to destroy it, and I have to claim its power for myself. That's been Sargeras' game plan for Azeroth since the beginning. He wants to come here, and he wants the power of the Well. He wants to take it for himself. So, I think it's very likely that Gul'dan is under direct orders to get him through. It's not necessarily as important to blow up Azeroth and destroy it as it is to bring Sargeras through. Sargeras wants to be in this world. He's wanted to be in this world for like thousands of years. He went so far as to possess a baby to do it. So, I think that is Gul'dan's plan. That's my thing. I'm thinking anyway.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, it's the only thing that makes logical sense. It's the end game, right? At this point, like, that's what we're assuming, is this is sort of the end game. We've identified this. This is what we need. This is the last piece of that puzzle that we need to bring my big boss over and make him happy, so he doesn't like torment me for millennia again, because that was not very good the first time. So I don't want to do that again. You know, so I need this Well. Give me this Well. Give it to me.
So just a little bit of theorizing here, just, you know, for the sake of curiosity. What do you guys think the chances are that we are going to see Sargeras at some point during this expansion? Like, actually see him fight him?
I don't know.
Or do you think he's going to be the invisible boogeyman for a little while longer?
I think he's the ultimate carrot on the stick. My honest answer is, I think that unless we are going directly to, like, Argus or something, and, like, from there going elsewhere, I don't think we're going to have a final confrontation with him yet. That's, like, the big end game for, as far as I can see, for the game itself. Like, that's the ultimate ending if you ever wanted to, like, close the servers down or whatever the case is. Not that I'm saying it's going to happen, folks. Don't get worried. It's just one of those things, like, if they ever wanted to have that one final big bang, he's the final big bang. I do think we will see touches of him, maybe a reappearance of the avatar of him, but I don't think we'll actually see him.
What do you think, Rossi?
I was thinking back to Wrath of the Lich King and the Wrathgate. And if you remember, if you played the Horde, if you did Horde side on that quest, you get to a certain point where you're confronting,
Varimothras.
Varimothras, yes, thank you. You're confronting Varimothras, and he's trying to open portals inside Undercity's throne room itself. And the voice is coming through basically saying, "You failed me, Varimothras. You promised me you would do this, and you failed me." And Varimothras says, "This is only an interruption, my lord. I promise I will make it right." And in the voice files, it was voice of Sargeras. Now, I think something like that is very possible. Like, we know, this is a spoiler, but we know it from data mining, that both Mal'Ganis and Gul'dan, and no, not Mal'Ganis, Tychondris and Gul'dan are in the first raid with the Nightborne.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're both in there. Whether or not, and it certainly seems to indicate that we kill Gul'dan. With Gul'dan dead, that would mean that Sargeras needs somebody else to open the portal.
Is Gul'dan actually going to die? That's my question. Is he going to die, or has he become part of the Burning Legion to the point where
he's got a demon soul?
Yeah, where he'll pop back over, you know? Because he's got those weird little spines coming out of his back. We don't know. He's been chugging that green Kool-Aid.
And the other possibility, if we remember with the original Gul'dan, he had a way to cheat death. He had a way to put souls of warlocks mm-hmm. into truncheons and animate them into corpses.
Death Knight Gul'dan would be terrifying. Well, so terrifying.
Well, within the realm of possibilities.
So there's lots of ways it could go. But I think basically at some point we're going to have to go into the tomb of Ser Garrus to stop all this. We'll need the five artifacts, the Pillars of Creation, in order to seal the portal and prevent the Leech from coming through for a while. So we'll need to go in there. Whether or not it'll be like the second or third tier, I don't know. But when we go in there, I would be very surprised if the Avatar isn't in there, because that's where she put its body. And I would be very surprised if the demons of the Burning Legion weren't, you know, going to pick it back up and get it moving and use it against us. That just seems like a wasted opportunity to me. Whether or not Ser Garrus himself makes an appearance, I don't know. It could be something as simple as there's a big portal forming and in it you can see the vague shadowy form of Ser Garrus. Or, you know, maybe he'll actually stick a foot through. Or, like, imagine a fight that was literally his hand coming through.
We have to fight Ser Garrus' finger.
You know, yeah. I'm A-okay with, like, Mega Man-style boss fights. I'm just saying, like, I like those. I think those are awesome.
I just think we could very well end up with a situation where, like, we're basically just trying to keep him from sticking his hand through, a la Broxagar with the magic wood axe, creating just enough of a wound to keep him from getting in. That could happen. I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't actually show up, because he is such a big deal. You know, he is the ultimate. He is basically, once Ser Garrus is beaten, there's only one thing worse than Ser Garrus out there, and that's the Void Lords.
So here's my other question. And this was a Q question, and I kind of answered it, but I almost kind of want to pose it to you guys too, because I think it's worth talking about. Obviously the Nightborn, they turned away from Ezshara back when she was, you know, all gung-ho about bringing the Burning Legion to Azeroth back in the War of the Ancients. Somebody wanted to know why, or if it was possible for the Nightborn to contact Ezshara now. And I theorized that no, they probably wouldn't go that route because, number one, they'd already turned away from her once, and number two, she's in Naga form now, and I imagine they're probably not too keen on that.
There's spoilers about that one.
Are there spoilers about that one?
Yeah.
Inasuna, yeah. Ashara is not limited to her Naga form.
Okay. All I'm going to say is that, and this is, I don't know if I would qualify this as so much of a spoiler, but visually, and this has already been on the website, this has already been on many of their own stuff that they've released, there are several statues of Ezshara in her Naga form throughout Azuna. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. So, yeah, I guess we won't talk about that then, but I wanted to, but now we can't.
We can still talk about...
We can skirt around some of it, yeah.
Why don't you guys skirt... Rossi, give us some skirting around and talk about it a little bit here.
The question you're asking is, can they reach Ezshara? That's the first part of it. You're asking if they can do it. Yes, they can do it. Elisandre is probably the second most powerful magician on Azeroth. And I say that because Ezshara is probably the first most powerful magician on Azeroth. Ezshara is revealed in Azuna, and again, not going to give any spoilers, but she's revealed to be immensely powerful.
Yeah, like stupidly powerful, like Quake in your boots powerful.
She, I can say this much because it's established in the background material for the website. She is directly responsible for what happened to Azuna.
Mm-hmm.
That is Ezshara. It wasn't Ezshara, like, you know, it's not like she took
it
all
It wasn't an accident.
It. No, not only was it not an accident, it wasn't like it took her a lot to do it. She turned away for a second from what she was doing and smote Azuna, and then went back to what she was doing.
Yeah.
She is powerful enough that Magtheridon knew he couldn't take her.
Well, yeah, in the War on the Ancients trilogy, I mean, Magtheridon, there was a line in there with Magtheridon, and I like going back to this line every now and again because it really kind of encompasses just how powerful Ezshara was. Now, keep in mind that when he was talking about Ezshara, he was talking about Ezshara before she was juiced up by the old gods. But he said that she was powerful enough that only Ser Garrus and his lieutenants, Kil'jaeden and Archimonde, held a candle to her, were more powerful than she was.
I would say at this point that I would be surprised if Kil'jaeden and Archimonde are more powerful than Ezshara.
At this point, yeah.
Well, yeah, because at this point, prior to that, she hadn't been juiced up by the old gods.
I'm saying I'm not even talking about the old gods. I'm talking about 10,000 years ago. I think she could take them.
Yeah.
And right now,
well,
I absolutely let me say this way. They won't contact Ashara for one very simple reason. She would be displeased with them.
Well,
and you don't want to be the people she's directly displeased with.
It's one of those things where there's three things here that are two things that I think are kind of important. One, it's sort of a situation where it's like the Harry Potter Voldemort thing. Like, nobody says her name. Why does nobody want to say her name? Because she's so powerful. And this has already been established. She's got eyes and ears everywhere on Azeroth. Literally anywhere that water touches, she has an ear there. That, and she's bored
you
enough.
Say her name, she yeah, might exactly. show up, and you and, really don't want her to show up.
And she's bored enough at where she what she's doing, or she's that maniacal enough, or that really that much of a chess player that she's waiting for those opportunities. She's listening to a million conversations at a time, like not even thinking about it. And that's already been established over the course of the entirety of the existence of Warcraft. Like,
go back to Cataclysm for a moment. And let's look at this simple fact. Ashara successfully outmaneuvered the archdruid of the world and did it more or less just as an obligation to the old gods. And she did it in the most diffident manner possible. Barely even cared.
Yeah, if you haven't played through Darkshore by this point in time, if you haven't played through the Cataclysm revamp of Darkshore, I really recommend that you go do so, because there is, I mean, you see her. She shows up, and she's not really too concerned about anything that's going on. And in fact, she's just kind of like, yep, I decided to keep you distracted so that, you know, my buddies could go take over Hyjal. Good luck with that. And then she leaves.
Yep. At this point,
she's
nonchalant
about the whole thing.
At this
really.
Point, I'm going to say this much about Ashara.
Mm-hmm.
She is at the point now where she is the only being on Azeroth who can deal with the old gods, and not only doesn't go insane, but barely cares what they want.
Well, and this is kind of important, too, and I think this is something that I don't think has really been talked about. You have to understand, when we talk about it, where do Highborn derive their power from? Where did they get all of their arcane magic from? From the well. What was the well? The pure, undiluted essence of a Titan.
Not just any Titan.
The most powerful Titan.
The Titan with the power, supposedly, to confront and defeat the Void Lords, which probably had, you know, that has a lot... Yeah. To do with the fact that Ashara is so unconcerned with the old gods. She's like, yeah, sure, I'll team up with you right now.
But not only does she have all that power, but now she's taking the old gods, the Void Lord's power too.
Yeah.
She is double juiced. Like, she is getting like two of the most insane fonts of power in all of existence that course through her. And that's why she's like, whatever.
Needless to say, she's been disqualified from entering the MLB Hall of Fame for like eternity. But anyway, moving on. Sorry, Rossi, go ahead.
Though there's also the fact that the amount of raw power she has is in of itself impressive. But what's more impressive is the way she can maneuver. In that everyone forgot.
Brilliant.
People thought that Ashara basically controlled everyone with her beauty. And she did. Her beauty and charisma were tools she used to control people.
It was a chess piece.
But it's not the sum total of her political acumen. She was a woman who could navigate the politics of the, at that time, most advanced civilization on Azeroth, and did so with ease. And she's managed to basically put herself in a position where every time the Legion or the old gods get up to anything on Azeroth, she comes out on top. She comes out with her power fully intact, she loses nothing, she gains things from each attempt, and she doesn't have to commit more than a token force each time.
There was almost this kind of implication during the War of the Ancients trilogy, and I really liked that implication. I came away with it feeling like Ashara, she wasn't just ruling because she was beautiful, she was ruling because she had enough power to pretty much like hold the entirety of Kaldare society under this sort of compulsion. Like, the closer they were to her, the more devoted they were to her, physically speaking.
Yeah, you know, and that's true, but go ahead.
I'm starting to question whether that was actually a spell she cast, or she was just that darn good at playing off of each other. Because let's take a look at just, you take a look at the real world and you look at people and you're like, why does anybody like them? And then you watch them interact with people and
the charisma.
And they know how to play off of every single person's wants and desires. And they know how to tell them exactly what they want to hear. And I'm starting to question whether it was an arcane spell she cast or whether she was just that good at reading those around her and knowing what to do. Because maybe she didn't have to cast a spell. She was just, I mean, I don't want to say like a people person, but like she just knew every right thing to say at every right moment.
It's sort of like the game in Orlais in Dragon Age.
Yeah,
yeah. She's a master.
I would be willing to say, too, that those that displeased Ashara quickly learned the pain of it. And as soon as is a big sign of that. She took the time in the middle of the most chaotic moment in her people's civilization, while she herself was under direct threat, to do something that monstrous. You know, if the Highborn are not going to reach out to, I mean, the Nightborn are not going to reach out to her because they know the cost. Like, the Legion may be bad, but they're brutes. Worse. Yeah, the Legion are brutes. They're thugs who burn things to the ground. Gul'dan is he's like an unwashed monster from another world. He's not a good politician. He's not that kind of manipulative. He is manipulative, but he's not
Ashara. No.
Yeah, Ashara, they know better.
She's a really clever snake. The Legion is a bunch of rampaging rhinoceroses in comparison, really. And she knows it. She knows it.
Yeah, Elisande, for that matter, knows who her, you know, she knows what will happen to her, you know, under Ashara's return. And plus, Ashara isn't a night elf anymore. She isn't even like, she is as different from them as they are from the night elves. You know what I'm saying? She's not somebody they're going to reach out to. I'm sure they could reach out to her. I'm sure they could, you know, if Illidan could call up Sunaga, then there's no way that Melisandre couldn't, but she's not going to. I really don't see it happening.
Now, I would like to say that all these points that we're making is why Ashara is probably my favorite villain in a video game ever.
I love her, and it's really funny because I love her that much, but we've never
seen her,
dealt with her at all. And I'm wondering, I'm kind of hoping that we see her in a much more active capacity. Obviously, you know, the Nightborn and this comic and everything else, this deals with events that happen in Suramar and also in Azuna. It ties into what happens in Azuna. Azuna is one of the four leveling zones that you can choose from the outset in Legion. But the other comic that came out, and I feel like we should move on to that, the other comic that came out just last week is called High Mountain, A Mountain Divided. And that one was written by Robert Brooks, who's written several of the short stories for the website, including Death from Above, which is probably one of my favorite because Manted Rock. And the art on this one was by David Keg. And David Keg's never actually done anything for Blizzard before. This was like his first thing. And can I just say that this guy draws some of the best Tauren I have ever seen?
His art style is very Alex Ross inspired. Like, you can see the watercolor effects, and it fits perfectly, especially with the Tauren aesthetic. Yeah,
it is absolutely beautiful. And Rossi, I know you're a big Tauren fan. What'd you think?
It pretty much fit what I figured was. If you did the original High Mountain back in the early parts of the beta, it fit in with stuff that they did then and then took out. And I think I know why they took it out, was so they could put it here. And in terms of, like, it's interesting because the High Mountain Tauren are different for various reasons, one of which is Holn High Mountain. And Holn's one of my favorite characters because he goes back to the War of the Ancients trilogy, and he's one of the really cool ones that's introduced there. And then you never hear much about him. And obviously, there are high mountain outside of the Broken Isles. There's a high mountain in the Burning. If you go to the Burning Crusade starting zone, you go down the Dark Portal steps, and there's a high mountain Tauren right there. But he does not have the horns that these guys do. So there's a separation after Holm left to go start the high
some
mountain.
Some of the high mountains stayed where they were. Yeah. And some of them wandered on. And I know that the Warcraft manga, there's actually a High Mountain, Trag High Mountain.
Yeah, Trag is that guy.
He becomes a Death Knight. And it's because he left, and he doesn't have the horns or anything like that. The horns themselves are kind of an interesting story, too, because Holm basically, he found a moose that was favored by Malorn. His name mm-hmm. was Etchero, and Etchero pretty much became his companion, I guess. And because he saved Etchero, he received a blessing from Cenarius, and it was basically so that his people would forever have Cenarius's favor. And he gave them the horns of Etchero. That's why they have the moose horns, and that's why they look different. It was a blessing from a demigod. Yeah. It wasn't like actual evolution or anything here. They were changed. They were magically altered. High Mountain, the comic pretty much, it sets up what you see when you first get to High Mountain itself.
It sets up the tribes and everything.
And yeah. Joe, you want to talk about that a little bit?
About the different tribes. So there's, the comic starts with the meaning of, I believe it's the Skyhorn, the Rivermane, and the Blood Totem, with the Drogbar. Nice little, I don't know why his thing is feathers, but it is. He's got a crown of feathers. It's the Drogbar King that we're going to be seeing
Argul
at some point. And it's interesting because you have this meeting of the clans that are sitting there trying to discuss how best to take care of the Legion. They know that the Legion is coming, and they're like, how do we deal with this? What should we do? And there's these moments where, you know, they're like, we've seen the Alliance fight. We've seen the Horde, you know, fight. And, well, they failed. So what are we going to do? What recourse do we have? And there's this interesting moment where you see that they actually still have the Hammer of Khosgaroth, which it's there.
And that hammer, that hammer was basically entrusted to them. They were supposed to watch over it, protect it, and keep it, but they can never use it. They can never use it. And the Drogbar, obviously, the Drogbar is like, hey, you have that big hammer. Why don't you just use that thing? Like, hello, guys? You know, this would make sense. Obviously he's a little bit more selfish than that, but what this does though is this kind of sets up that conflict that you run into like the second you arrive in High Mountain pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a little bit of a lead in, but then you jump right into, oh, okay, some stuff went down. The stuff that went down is the stuff that's shown in this comic here. So that makes it worth reading the comic right there, just so you have a little more familiarity. Do you need to read the comic to understand what's going on in High Mountain? No. Nope. But it helps. Rossi, I'm sorry. You were going to say something?
No, I was agreeing with you.
Oh, okay.
You don't need to read the comic, but one of the things that's interesting is it does the comic basically sets up, you know, that the High Mountain have split into multiple tribes. You have the Rivermane. I can't remember the other two names at the moment. Oh, why am I having
Blood
that problem?
Blood Totem and
Blood Totem Skyhorn.
And the Skyhorn.
Yeah, and the Rivermane and the High Mountain themselves. Like there's some people who are still in the original High Mountain tribe, and then the other three tribes have formed out of that one group. They're all descended from Holm because they all have the horns. So
I don't know about that because the original story of Holm was uniting of the original tribes. I don't think they were all related. I think they were all just sworn to Holm.
No, because he actually united all the tribes.
Yes.
No, I mean all the tribes.
I know. So that's what I'm saying.
I don't think that those are the ones who got the horns. I think the horns went to the original High Mountain tribe. They went to his descendants and his descendants' descendants. And that's why you see them. That's how I understand it. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but that's how I got it.
My theory on that one, or at least I think the way it was explained is that it's those who settled on High Mountain and stayed. I think. I don't know. We'll find out, though, at some point. Continue, please. Yeah. I'm sorry.
At any rate, like you guys said, basically the thing about the Hammer of Khosgaroth is originally it was entrusted to Deathwing when he was Neltharion. It wasn't originally entrusted to the Tauren or the Drogbar. In fact, Neltharion, when he was Neltharion, not only did he keep it, he kept anyone away from it by killing them. Like if you went
he
near
guarded
this,
it.
Yeah, and there's actually a really great, this is a little spoilery, but I'm just going to mention anyway. There's a great thing where you go into Neltharion's lair and you actually find a statue he erected that is it's a Drogbar that's been petrified. Yep. And on it, he says, here's the symbol of your rebellion. Here's where you learn, you know, your place in the world. You are creatures of the earth, and I, Neltharion, am your warder. And he turned one of them to stone for daring to rise up against him. So whatever the Drogbar are, they're creatures of the deep earth, and Neltharion used them as slaves.
Do you think they have relation to the dwarves and the Trog and the Earthen and all that?
I wouldn't be surprised, but they definitely don't look much like them. They could definitely.
That's what I was wondering, because there's like not much like of a resemblance. Trolls, actually, yeah.
If I had a hazard, they look like trolls that just stayed underground.
They do have a certain dark trollishness to them, and it is even a thing where they're called trolls. They're called rock trolls at one point. Someone calls them rock trolls. So, maybe, but...
Was that a nickname, or was that just like...
Yeah. It could just be what they are. I don't know.
Was it an insult, or was it... Was it
well,
actually...
I mean, they have the long pointy ears. They have the tusks. They look almost like an orc and a troll hybrid. But I'm wondering if it's... I'm wondering if they are trolls or you know, night trolls or whatever, or dark trolls that sort of evolved just due to proximity to the hammer.
Or to Deathwing, for that matter.
Or to Deathwing, yeah.
Because they were slaves to Neltharion for a very long time. And they're the ones... It was actually the Drogbar who put the original plates on Deathwing.
Yes.
The goblins forged them, but the Drogbar are the ones who put them on them.
Do you think there's, like, a tie between the goblins and the Drogbar, maybe?
They don't really seem to have much regard for each other. That doesn't mean much. Goblins are notorious for that. But, yeah, they definitely... They call them goblin trash when they're talking about the... plates. They don't like the goblins very much. That much is clear. But the Drogbar themselves, there's actually a Drogbar tribe that rejoins the High Mountain.
Yes.
They actually turn against Dargul. Yeah.
So they're not all bad.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I don't think they're bad by default. They're following their king. They're following their leader. And that's a story we've seen so many times. Like, they think that their leader has the answer. He now has the control of this powerful artifact, this Titan weapon, this thing that was used to forge life. Clearly, he has the right of it and will defend us against this looming threat of the Burning Legion, who are lighting the world on fire, who are coming to destroy everything we hold dear. I mean, at that point, you would obviously follow the person you think is going to protect you the most. So,
and
I mean,
plus,
it makes
if you
perfect
follow,
sense.
If you look at, like, even what he says in the comic, he isn't like, ha, 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 I want to rule the mountain. He's like, you people are going to stand around and do nothing while this burns. Your shaman here wants to give the hammer away to some outsider. No, I'm taking it. And since I know that now that I've taken it, you know, the Tauren come out and say, we'll starve you to death. You don't want to do this. We'll starve you. He's like, fine, then we'll take the food from you.
And that's a point of escalation, too, that's really important to note, is that until the threat of starvation was a thing, there really wasn't, like, open hostility or, like, I wouldn't say open hostility, but it wasn't like he was going through murdering everybody. He was just going to take the hammer and go win a war. That was his whole point. Then they're like, we're going to murder your people by denying you the very basic necessities of life you need if you don't put the hammer back. And he's like, well, I got the hammer in my hand, so no, I'm just going to go take this stuff now.
Well, he actually says before that, he even says, you don't understand, I've come here to end this war.
Yeah, exactly.
So he basically implies to them that he's going to kill them. He isn't like he from the very beginning. It's like, I have the hammer. I'm going to kill you. Take over the mountain. But when they escalate it, he does start attacking them directly. That's when he diverts to them. But to cut back to the thing we were talking about with the trolls, there's a quest that Navarog, who is the Drogbar, gives in High Mountain called Rock Troll in a Hard Place. So they call themselves Rock Trolls. That is a name that they have for themselves. Why they call themselves that, I don't know. But this whole thing is interesting because even some of the High Mountain Tauren, like when the spirit speaker Ebonhorn says, this is what the spirits have shown me, some of the Tauren don't like it.
No.
Like, there's a, I think it's a blood hoof.
They've spent like 10,000 years fulfilling their duty, and now someone's saying, oh yeah, that thing that we've dedicated all this time to guarding and protecting, we need to give it away now. And
yeah,
they don't want to do that. Go ahead, Rossi. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that was perfectly fine. I was just agreeing with you. But it all comes down to the fact that Ebonhorn has special understanding of the situation because he was there 10,000 years ago. I'm not going to say any more than that, but he was there. He knows what Holm did and all that Holm did. Holm did more stuff than you think. After the Burning Legion is defeated, Holm is the one who comes to High Mountain because he comes there because it's where Deathwing lairs. And as we all know, during the War of the Ancients, Deathwing became Deathwing. He gave up being Neltharion and became Deathwing when he created the demon soul, the dragon soul, which it has both names. And this is where he went to try and fix himself after the, you know, the corruption of the old gods began splitting him open. This is the place where he first forged his first set of adamantite plate to try and keep himself together. All of that takes place during this period of time, and Holn shows up right on his heels. Holn is hunting him. Holn is like, okay, the Night Elves are obviously preoccupied with what's going on to them, with their civilization having fallen apart. The Earthen don't care. It's up to me. I have to get Death. If Deathwing is as big a threat as the Legion, left unchecked, he has to be stopped. And so Holn, he does something, and it's involved with the hammer. I'm not going to say too much more. But that's why the High Mountain Tauren ended up with it. And that's why the Drogbar...
Because obviously Deathwing isn't exactly capable of guarding the thing anymore.
Not in a responsible way, no. It's sort of like giving the keys to your car to like the dude who just drank an entire six-pack and wants to drive real bad.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. But it's also why the Drogbar had, for 10,000 years, accepted that the Tauren had the hammer. Until under King Dargul here, the Drogbar had been at peace with them. They were like, yeah, you guys can be trusted with it. And it's because of what Holm does. So the comic really ties into High Mountain in a really, like, if you do High Mountain and read the comic, you basically have both halves of a story.
And you really should at this point, I think.
Yeah.
It's a good comic.
It's
also
a good story.
It's also drawn really well. I mean, the art in this is just, it's gorgeous. It's been a while since I've seen a Tauren drawn where I was like, yeah, that's a Tauren.
Yeah, they look very Tauren-y.
Yeah, it's really well done. There are four comics, according to the website, that are meant to come out. We've gotten three of them, which means that the next one should be coming out next week, theoretically. We also have the pre-patch landing on the 19th. And by the time people on the website listen to this, obviously the pre-patch is going to be out and the comic's going to be out too. But let's just make some predictions here. What do you think that fourth comic is going to be? What do you think it'll involve?
Sylvanas.
You think? Yeah. Why?
Because there's two zones left to do, right? They've done the story of, well, actually, yeah, they've done the story of Suramar and High Mountain, and then they did like the Moira comic, which doesn't touch on any zone. So there's actually three zones they could touch on. There's Azuna, but Azuna is pretty tied up in the Highborn stuff, the Nightborn stuff. I'm sorry. There's Val'Sharah, and that's a possible, but I feel like Val'Sharah is pretty self-contained. Like, you don't really need any further.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that, yeah. Yeah,
Val'Sharah pretty much has its whole story in there. But Sylvanas is a major character. She's, like, in the cinematic. She's, well, we can just say it. She's Warchief of the Horde now. She's a big deal. And what she's doing in Stormheim, we know what she's doing, but we haven't seen her come to that decision. Why did she decide to go do this? What was her thinking behind it? What is she? And we know what she's trying to do, but we don't know how she decided to do it.
What's the impetus? Yeah.
Yeah. And also, we have Gen on the other side, and Gen is kind of forced into a role he doesn't necessarily want to be in. If you look at what's actually happened with the events of this expansion, Gen becomes the most prominent monarch on Azeroth.
Mm-hmm. For the Alliance,
For the Alliance. Well, no, because he's the most prominent of the old monarchs. He's the only one left.
Yeah, he is.
Of all
Well,
people,
I mean, technically Bronzebeard's now running around. But
from
yeah.
that original Alliance of Lordaeron, though. The original.
Yeah, if you look at it, Taranis is dead. There's basically... The passing of the old order has happened. It's all in the hands of the next generation, except for Gen. And Gen is in a situation where his only heir is his daughter, Tess. And we see Tess. Tess is actually doing things in this expansion. And that's great. But, you know, he's lost the person who was supposed to be his heir. He's been forced to fight well past the point where other kings have died or retired. And he's now in a position where the person that killed his son is in charge of the opposing faction.
And that can't feel good.
Oh, Gen is well past the point of talking peace with the Forsaken. It is not going to happen.
I don't think he ever would have. I don't think there's a point where Gen ever would have even like remotely considered it. He was kind of forced. His hand was forced. He wouldn't have confronted them had the cataclysm not happened. Had that wall not come down. Had you know, all of the chaos that went on not gone on. Was doing his best. I want to say that, like, Gen of the old guard, Gen avoided the most tumultuous years, the years that took everybody else out, just because he closed off his kingdom. So he was almost in this place of stasis, and now he's actually having to fight for the first time and like fight really hard. And I find Gen a fascinating character. I love him to bits. So So you think that the next comic that's going to be it'll be something with Sylvanas and probably Gen too somewhere in there.
I think it's going to touch Stormheim and stuff.
Yeah, okay. I think I'm agree. Joe, I think specifically it's going to be Stormheim because it makes the most story sense. It has some of the most importance to what the actual development of the Horde and the Alliance are going to be. Like the events of Stormheim are shaping factions.
Do you know what I'm hoping we'll see?
What's that?
Even if we don't see it, I'm hoping maybe we'll see it at some point. I want to see Helya's story.
Yeah, I think we're going to see something about that a little bit later, though.
I want to see her full story. I want to see a comic version of, like, the beginnings of Helya before she became who she is in Legion.
Firebeard got her.
Yeah, and I don't think what we're going to see that as the fourth comic. I think it's more likely we're going to see something with like Sylvanas and whatnot, because that makes sense from a story standpoint. Either that, or if they want to, they can go ahead and go into the Val'Shara stuff and do something with Tyrande and Malfurion. But I think it's more likely that we'll see Sylvanas because I think she's a bigger player in this. And yeah, I think what you said is right, Rossi. That Val'Shara is kind of like it's self-contained. It's its own thing. The other thing that I wanted to ask you guys, obviously, you know, you have these four zones that you get to pick. You can pick Azuna, you can pick Val'Shara, you can pick Stormheim, you can pick High Mountain. Which one out of the four, story-wise, would you recommend tackling first? Just from a story standpoint, which one do you find the most fascinating?
That's so hard.
What do you think, Rossi?
Every time since it's opened, I go to Azuna first. They're all good, and I think Val'Shara is really good. But I always go to Azuna first because the Azuna story, I've completed the zone a couple of times now, and the Azuna story has always remained relatively consistently strong, especially once you get past a certain point. There's a character you meet, I won't say much more other than he's voiced by Frank Welker.
Oh, yep, Ben.
And,
Again, we get Frank Welker again. Happy. I'm so happy.
And he's Frank Welker in his full malevolent yet charming way. Oh. You know when Frank Welker does that evil, but at the same time kind of approachable? My friend! Like, he calls you my friend and your back goes up. It's like, oh, don't call me that.
Yes.
And it's, in the end, it's actually somewhat tragic and heartbreaking what happens to this character. And the whole thing is kind of like, you end up dealing with these spirits, and it's just, I don't want to just dump the zone on you, but
there's a lot there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really good zone. Val'Shara is also very good. I'm going to say this for all the, you know, we talked about Warlords of Draenor kind of being the, you know, Draenei expansion that didn't really do as much for Draenei as we'd hoped. Legion is feeling very much like a Night Elf expansion that does a lot for Night Elves. There's
Which
two zones.
Because we haven't really seen, I don't think we've really dealt with them in depth before, like in any of the expansions. They never really had that focus.
Yeah.
I'm kind of happy that they're getting that focus.
I'll just tell this bit. There's a bit in Azuna where you run into these two Night Elf mages who the Kirin Tor have sent in, and they're like, you know, they're Night Elves, they're mages. And they're like, you know, we were here 10,000 years ago. We ran from here. During the war, and we've never seen our parents again, and obviously they died. And by the end of the quest, you get closure for them. I'm not going to say how exactly, but you get closure for them. And it's really interesting to think about, this is how long these people have lived, that being a mage is like their fifth or sixth career. Like, they've done other things with their time. They've lived 10,000 years in Night Elf society.
There was that brief stint with underwater basket weaving, didn't pan out. Mage
it turned
life.
Out, you know, Naga decided to keep that to themselves.
Yeah.
But it is, it's really, High Mountain is a good zone. It really is. And Stormheim, it's not that it's not a good story. I'm just not very comfortable with the first half of it. The first half of it is very Alliance-focused, and I don't like it all that much. But there's a lot to like in Stormheim, too. But for me, Azuna is the best overall experience.
What about you, Joe? What do you think?
I agree with Rossi's thoughts, but for me, it's going to depend on what you want out of it. If you want,
I'm talking about personal opinion here. Which one did you like?
I'm actually going to that.
Oh, okay. All right.
For me, I tend to like more emotionally charged stories. I like things that draw me in from a more familiar emotional standpoint, which is why I'm going to be starting in High Mountain, because I feel the story there is a little more personal than any of the other stories in the zones, except for maybe Valshiraz. That's just my personal opinion. Also, the fact that I really, really enjoy the whole Tauren clans and the history of that area, so much so that the story playing through it pretty much cemented my decision that I'm going to be race changing Loder to Tauren, back to his original Loder roots from Classic WoW.
Oh my gosh!
I will actually be doing that.
No more Panda Joe, huh?
No more Panda Joe. It's going to be going back to my roots in Tauren, because it's the Tauren story that I've been waiting for. It's the Tauren story that I've wanted for a very long time. And it's like, this is to me the essence of what it is to be Tauren. It's got that spirituality. It's got that sense of the tribal community. It's got everything that speaks to me about a race. And it's absolutely, it's not perfect by far, but I don't think anything is, but it's very, very good. And it drew me in very quickly.
See, honestly, that might be why I like Azuna so much, because Azuna is, like, I was playing a Night Elf Warrior when I did it, and it's, if you're on a Night Elf, if you've ever
deeply
played a Night
personal.
Elf, it's, you sit there and go, my God, was my character here for this? Did I see this happen? Did I live through it? Or am I younger? Is this, like, the story of my ancestors? And it's just really, there's a moment where a character appears, emotional impact. Yeah. Yeah, there's a moment where a character shows up in the zone, and you see this character show up, you will honestly go, oh, beep. You know, seriously, that was my reaction when this character showed up.
Oh, yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was an
okay,
honest spot.
Obviously, yeah. I need to go finish playing through Azuna. Yes, I got like about halfway through it, and then I stopped because, well, I ran out of time, honestly. So I need to go back and I need to play it again. As far as myself is concerned, honestly, and I know both of you are going to disagree with me, but I like having my heart ripped out, and I really liked Stormheim. I liked the intro to Stormheim. I liked how uncomfortable it made me feel, just because I like stories that push the envelope like that, where I'm like, ooh, do I, like, playing it on the Horde side, it makes you wonder just what you've gotten yourself into. Playing it on the Alliance side, it just, like, kicks you into high motion, you know.
I think the Stormheim thing is very much, it is not, and I really want to say this again, it's not a bad story.
No, it's good stories, honestly. I think we're getting Warlords level leveling experiences here, you know?
I would actually say, like, because the characters, not only they're more familiar, but they're not alternate versions of themselves. Like, that is Nathanos. It's not alternate Nathanos. It's Nathanos. I think in a lot of ways that's the problem Warlords had, was trying to make you care about characters who weren't really themselves.
On the one hand, you really, like, you felt something when you saw that last cinematic in Shadowmoon Valley and Velen, like, sacrificed himself, and there was that moment, that emotional catch in your throat, and then it started to sink in. Wait, we have a spare at home.
Yeah.
So I guess it doesn't really matter in the, like, but it did, but it didn't. You know what I mean? And Warlord seemed like the emotional investment wasn't there. So I was looking for that kind of emotional gut punch. And I think that for me anyway, Stormheim delivered that. What I really love about this expansion so far, though, is that we are touching on races that haven't really gotten that deep dive that everybody else has, maybe even, you know, repeatedly. So we've got, you know, there's obviously a focus on the Forsaken, there's a focus on the Worgen, you've got a whole zone dedicated to ancient Tauren lore that we've never, like, experienced before, and then obviously Night Elf stuff up the yin-yang.
Yeah, there's like 2.5 zones full of Night Elf stuff.
Right, so I'm really happy because it's like, we aren't focusing on the orc stuff anymore. We've done the troll thing so many times that we're almost kind of sick of it. The Pandaren, they had like an entire expansion of stuff. The only race I think right now that hasn't gotten like majorly touched, obviously, is like the gnomes and the goblins, really. And I don't know if that's because
They're kind of a jokey race.
Yeah, they're considered comic relief or whatever. But I'd love to see, like, in future expansions, I'd love to see something that was actually, like, in depth with both of those races. I would love to go back to Kazan. I would love to see, you know, that kind of thing. We're not going to see it this time around, obviously.
We do see something, though. I really just have to tell you this.
Yeah.
They added in the most recent launch, when they were testing the launch, not for Legion, but the 7.0 launch, they were testing that.
The pre-patch.
Yeah, they added a quest where, oh, this is real spoilery, so I'm going to just reiterate.
Let's not spoil it then.
Let me at least do this part. You go back to Alduar.
Yes.
And Alduar has been fixed up, and there's a mecha gnome waiting for you, and they tell you about the keepers, and there's actually a really great moment where the little mecha gnome is leading you into Alduar, and he goes, well, the heroes did free us, but then they left the place kind of in a shambles. They're not very good at cleaning up after themselves. And
yep, that's accurate.
And there's
look, we got our loot. We were done.
Yeah. That is basically the point that they make. But it gives a hint. Between that and the Hunter Beast Mastery gun, there is at least some gnome stuff. And they you know, there's some hope for gnomes actually getting a more thorough treatment. Not this expansion won't be that expansion for you, but it does have touches. It does have elements that I thought, you know, between gnome hunters and, oh, Lordy, I can't remember his name, and he's the gnome leader.
Mechatork.
Thank you. Yeah, Geblin Mechatork is present on the Broken Shore.
Yes.
We see him. There's bits and pieces where I've got hope for gnomes. I don't really think goblins need it as much, because there's been goblins throughout multiple expansions.
I want to see some kind of resolution to the whole Gallywix being leader thing, because Thrall put him in that leadership role, like kept him there. And it was obvious when you were playing through the Goblin starting zone that Gallywix really didn't have the best interests of his people at heart. I mean, yeah, do goblins ever have anybody's best interests in heart but themselves? No, probably not. But I would love to see a return to Kazan, and I would love to see some kind of like dive into goblin culture where we're like looking at it a little more closely and see if there's any kind of emotional hooks to be had there. That's the whole thing about goblins, is they're very dispassionate. They're in it for themselves. They're in it for the profit. Well, there's got to be something deeper there, you would think. You know, it can't just be a joke race, you would think, but that's what it seems to be playing to. Well, I wouldn't mind someday seeing if they could advance that a little bit, you know, seeing what they could do with it. But yeah, if you play a Night Elf, if you play a Worgen, if you play a Forsaken, if you play a Tauren, you're going to get a lot in Legion. And even if you don't play those races, you're still going to get a lot in Legion, because we haven't seen much from these people before, ever. So
yeah, I mean, I would say too, if you're human, actually Stormheim has quite a bit for you.
Yeah.
Just because
the Vrykul.
Yeah, the Vrykul, and plus it's a very alliance, and if you're alliance, it's a very alliance focused area. And if you're horde, it's very horde focused. It focuses on your faction. So you will, I think you'll get something out of it.
The other reason that I liked it was because there was like that whole faction heavy emphasis, and I kind of enjoyed that. I enjoy that there was like conflict ramping up again. Obviously, I don't know how that's going to resolve, and I can't wait to see how that resolves. But yeah, the next comic, obviously, next comic is probably going to come out this Thursday. If you're reading or if you're listening to the, if you're reading this, you aren't reading this. If you're listening to this via Patreon, it's going to be out this Thursday, probably. If you're listening to this on Sunday, it's probably already come out, and you should check the website, because I'm sure I've written it up already. But I think that kind of wraps us up. So Blizzard Watch, it's made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your questions answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And for you guys, listeners of Blizzard Watch, listeners of Lore Watch even, we're actually offering, there's an offer out there with Audible where you sign up for Audible and you can get a free 30-day trial, and that does come with a free audiobook download. Now, obviously, these comics are all free, but there is a lead-in novel, Illidan, and that one is one of the audiobooks that you can download for free. So if you haven't checked that out yet,
I really recommend you do, because that pre-patch is going to let us play Demon Hunters. So you can download that title or many of Blizzard's other titles at blizzardwatch.com/audible and sign up there. Anyway, you guys, I guess let's go ahead and wrap this up. So, Rossi, final thoughts?
Basically, my final thoughts are that at least by Tuesday, we're going to get to see the start of this. I mean, I don't think that the invasion starts immediately, but you're going to start to at least get to see a little bit of what's going on.
And it's about time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is about time. We're closing in on 2 years of Warlords, so it'll be slightly less than 2 years with this expansion's launch date in August. But yeah, I really think once they start the invasion, you'll really start to actually get to see, like, the story quest that opens up is really interesting. So.
Okay, Joe, final thoughts from you?
Be expecting lots of photos of my character after I give him horns, because it's going to be flooded all over social media as soon as I'm done.
You're going to need to get a new badge drawn for BlizzCon.
I really am, actually.
All right, well, that wraps us up, and we will see you guys in 2 weeks.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.